ready to listen to another episode of Hacker Voice Radio, your independent free speech media source.
You sound weak. You are listening to Hacker Voice Radio. Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, baby. Oh. Yes, she's yes, 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 and having a buffer overflow. Hacker Voice Radio does it to me every time.
Hello, Hacksaws. Welcome to another episode of Hacker Voice Radio. We're going live again on the 7th of December 2005. Not 2006 yet, 2005. We're still in 2005. Oh man, it's been a busy year, man. It's been a busy week, and it's just like flying through. I don't know if you've noticed how quickly this week's gone by.
Oh, yes.
It's already Wednesday. It's like tomorrow's going to be Thursday. And guess what? After that, it's going to be Friday, which means that the week is over. Which means that my week hasn't actually finished because I've got to do overtime on Saturday.
Overtime.
Yeah.
They're paying you extra?
Yes, of course. I'm not going to go. Yeah, I'm just going to voluntarily waste most of my Saturday. For absolutely nothing. Yeah, yeah. The only reason I'm doing it is because I really need some dosh. I really need to save up for New York, you know? I haven't actually been properly investing my money in the bank account. So, you know.
You're paid monthly as well, aren't you?
I am, yes. Monthly. Yeah.
You get the, what would it be, the January paycheck before Christmas.
Do you?
Yeah, we do. Or do you get yours kind of end of December?
Our standard is that we get it at the last Friday of each month. So right. That's a nice little day. Because sometimes the Friday comes before or a week before the month ends, depending on where 31st or 30th falls. So, yeah, I don't know when that will be, but it will be... they won't pay me in advance, sort of thing.
So it's kind of standard every single month. You know when the paycheck's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what we get is around this time of year we get last working day of the month.
Right.
Every month,
right.
Apart from December.
Okay.
Because a lot of people have time off around Christmas,
sure.
And we run on the skeleton crew.
Yeah.
So everyone gets paid kind of on the 20th.
Yeah.
And they should be paid on about the 30th.
Yeah.
Of that month. So, you've not spent your December paycheck yet. You're about halfway through December and you get another one.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's great. You think you're the richest man on earth. And you go out and you buy stupidly expensive presents.
Mm.
And then, after all the partying's done and you've had all the hangovers and you've put the tree away and New Year's finished, it's January.
Yeah.
And you've got a long month with no paycheck coming
yeah.
up the 31st.
Oh,
now,
man.
That's a bastard.
Because
you mentioned saving up there, and that's something that won't be fooled again this year.
It's really it's an issue for me right now. I mean, I managed to flog a few things to get some money, and I sold a few things, you know, because they really need, kind of like stat sort of thing, to be able to have like that turnover where the next paycheck runs over into a nice little lump sum, you know, the stuff that I've saved over. So I'm kind of secure in that knowledge, because every month the next day sort of thing I'm like instantly paying bills, so it's quite a bitch. And seeing as I am going away, I don't know if you bought your tickets yet. It's going to be like trying to work out how much money I'm going to need, how much emergency money I'll have to carry and all that kind of stuff. And
I actually checked up the flights and went back through Gmail and the one that you're going on.
Yeah.
And oh my god, would you believe the price?
It hasn't gone up, has it?
Yours was, what, 274?
274, something like that, yeah.
Well, last night I checked it. Guess what it was?
Like £300, £500?
£275.
my God.
I can't afford that, man.
I got done, man. I got done. I'm going to cancel my flight and rebook.
Budgeted for £274 and it's gone up to £275. I don't know why I'm going to get the extra money.
Oh, shit, it's gone up. I thought you said 250, sorry.
No, it's gone up £1.
£1? Oh, yeah. Man, you're getting done, man. You're getting done.
Getting stiff like fool.
Listen, man, if you really need some money, I think I can lend you, I think I can lend you 99p. Is that all right?
Well, I'll go out on the streets and beg for the rest.
Yeah. So,
you got any money for the first?
So I guess you've booked it or you're not, or...
I didn't actually book it last night, but I might as well just book it tonight.
Yeah, book it now on the show.
Yeah, you've been listening to my keystrokes.
Yeah.
4709-3112. Thankfully, that isn't my Visa card.
Oh, thanks for telling me what card you have. Now I can work out. Bollocks.
Hey, fuck my Visa, it's maxed out.
Good luck with that one, mate.
Yeah, good luck using it. Fuck off.
Oh man, I was kind of rapid on the news today, because my usual routine is like, I get into work, I piss off, piss about for another fucking 3 hours, just looking up stories on the internet to kind of like email you guys, and I guess your inbox is full once you check it like in the morning, because there's like 7 different emails from me.
You sent 3 or 4 today,
yeah,
it's nuts.
It probably pisses you off.
Oh, what's he want now? Oh, God. What is this?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah,
Hola.
So, I racked up some news. I don't know if you managed to read through any of the news stories, but I got quite a lot in there that are kind of related to the kind of stuff that's going on with the government. Some stuff about news stories about wireless and high-speed broadband. Some stuff about file sharing and my favorite intelligent design, and a few links. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, the people that believe in intelligent design, I'm not dissing on any Christians or anything, but they're really not intelligent. You can see why they believe it, because the whole kind of survival of the fittest and the whole kind of, basically how nature works, really they missed out on that bit, because for some reason, somehow, these guys survived, you know? These fucking idiots are going around preaching that God must be so powerful that this stuff, we don't even understand it, could be... I mean, the reason that you think it is like that is because you're kind of, well, a little bit simple. And honestly, if you're believing in that, you know, we are here because kind of like God just pissed in the bucket and, you know, it turned out to be human, I don't think that's kind of correct.
All right, well, here's my take on the whole thing.
Okay.
I'm going to get some emails. Theory of evolution to be correct. I do believe that evolution affects everything.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, animal and plant life, biological life, but everything. Everything changes over time.
But for some reason, however, these guys didn't evolve. That's the problem.
I do have a firm belief that there is, well, a God, basically, or a power much greater than any of ourselves that basically sparked the Big Bang, you know, way back when.
Right.
Now, as far as this power controlling everything that happens, I don't really believe it in a way that everything happens because there's some almighty figure in the heavens, you know, looking down at everything and making everything happen. Mm. I see it more as a very complex and enormous mathematical circumstance where the simple act of creation, and not of humans, but of the universe, you know, the simple act of creating existence has set everything on its course following a mathematical design.
Right.
Now, I believe in the laws of thermodynamics, and since the universe in itself is a perfect system, everything that happens had to have happened in order to maintain, perfect energy.
Hmm.
It's not that something else couldn't have happened, it's just that it didn't.
Well, I mean, the way I see it is, I really don't believe in a god. Now, I've tried the whole kind of religious thing. I was, quite into my Islam and stuff like that. I tried a lot of different kind of religious ideologies and all that kind of jazz. I really couldn't fit it into my lifestyle. I'm talking like when I was a very young child, even when I was like watching religious things on TV, like somebody's walking up a mountain and like says a fuck word, and gets struck down by lightning by God, and all you can see is his shoes smoking. I was like, I could believe the Mutant Ninja Turtles more than I could that, because there was something deeply wrong and very, very strange that kicked off something in my head, a process, and kind of it spiraled into a whole questioning of the whole belief structure of religion. Now, this is why I don't get into these kind of discussions at work or in public places, because I have very strong views, and I do offend many people because they have their view that, their God, whatever it may be, is, the sole creator, and they pray to him and all this kind of stuff. The way I have to see it is, the best place would be if people detach themselves from that and were able to live their own life and not have to be, I just think it's a waste of time and waste of energy. And I really don't see, people say, oh, it's built into our brains and stuff. Yeah, maybe like thousands of years ago, because our concept our concept of nature was very different. We had to, it was probably around a time when farming was kind of a really big thing, because people were very in tune with nature, and they had these controlling factors that they couldn't understand. If the season was bad, the crops didn't grow, and thousands of people starved to death, and they had to develop a system where they would pray for things to happen.
Well, there's a component to this that is, we need to be able to explain the unexplainable,
exactly.
And we need to be able to do that.
And I honestly believe
there's another component where I think that people are hardwired to need to have faith.
No, I that's the
to
thing.
To be able to believe in things that they don't understand.
I don't believe that I don't think that idea is correct, that we're hardwired to have to believe something, because that might have been...
Well, not that we... It's not like, any particular thing.
It's like our thing...
I think that we're hardwired to have faith.
Sure, but it's that kind of thing. The same thing, like we're hardwired to be frightened of snakes, or we're hardwired to fear... like very, very acidic food, because once in a very long time ago, snakes used to kill us and poisonous stuff used to threaten our life, and I believe that thing evolved through us and was a kind of a roll-on factor in the development of the human race. Exactly the same thing as fear of heights or fear of wild animals, because that was specifically something that was endangering our life back, thousands of years. And the structure of belief and the structure of guilt and, prayer giving and the survival aspect was you had to pray, otherwise you will die. You had to believe in that there was this thing that controlled your life, it controlled the cycle of seasons.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, but I think you're missing my point.
Okay.
I'm not talking about faith in a deity, faith in a religion,
right?
Faith in anything particular.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a human necessity to believe in something that they can't prove, that you can't understand.
Yeah.
And, whether it be faith in technology, or faith in humans. I mean, I read a wonderful book by a professor at Rutgers University called The Fallacy of Humanism.
Right.
Which involved many humans, if not most humans, have the founded belief, that given enough time and enough resources, humans can achieve anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an obvious fallacy.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
But that's a faith in itself. I'm not talking about faith in religion. I'm just saying that there's a portion of humanity.
Yeah.
There's a part of us that needs to believe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, that's true, that we do need to believe in something, otherwise we wouldn't progress. We are, like, the most dominant species on this planet. The only reason that we are there is because we have developed a much greater form of communication other than different, you know, we've adapted, basically. We've adapted faster, better than any other animal on this planet. We are still an animal, though. We exist, you know.
Oh, yes,
has
and
most everything.
Certainly.
But
the
that's
same
why
laws that apply to the dog apply to
exactly,
us.
But that relationship between a human and a dog is very much like a relationship between you and God, in a way, and you have belief that the dog will protect you, whereas the dog has only the need for company and food and all that kind of stuff.
I have a 20-pound beagle.
Yeah.
I'm making no claims that dog will ever be able to protect me against anything except maybe an insect.
But then again, in the back of your mind, when you're walking down the street, you might have that sense that the dog will kind of help your survival, in a sense, if you see what I mean.
Maybe if I had a Doberman, but...
Alright.
No, I have a completely dependent creature who couldn't protect himself if he wanted to, let alone me. He's cute, that's why I love him. He's not particularly smart.
Yeah.
I tell him on a daily basis, Watson, you are lucky, you are so adorable. Because if you were ugly, you would have been at the curb a long time ago.
Sure.
But no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, I have a hard time, you know, completely, I mean, a lot of the actions that people take in the name of religion or deity are absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
And the simple justification of it as saying that this is God's will, well, that's arrogance at its height. Because if you are going to go out a limb and say you do believe in a deity, you do believe in God, and that this is something so great that you can't prove or disprove it, you simply have to have faith in it, then it is the height of arrogance to believe that you can understand it, and beyond which you can determine what is God's will.
Yeah, no, I understand that, you know, it's like... Well, you know, the whole thing about... I think it's mainly in Christianity, Islam. I've experienced it in quite a lot of other religions, is where, you know, it's like... we can't actually say that this is real, but the thing is, would you risk it? Would you risk it on Judgment Day that you don't have the faith? You know, so you might as well, you know,
well,
just
see,
like
that's
by
not
default.
True faith.
Exactly.
That's not true
it's
faith
it's
at
it's
all.
Just a blind kind
that's
of
simple manipulation.
Precisely. And manipulation of people now, the whole kind of religion structure, the religious thing. I mean, I don't have anything against religion, but I have a lot against the religion as an organization, as a organized structure. That's mainly what I'm talking about. You know, I don't care what you believe, but after all, we're all human. We're all fucking the same.
True.
You know, you strip. You know,
I don't
you
really care
me.
What a person believes.
Yeah.
I just think it's important that people have faith.
Yeah.
You know,
if you have faith in what you do, and you have faith in yourself, then that's a start. You know,
that is a definite start. I also think that it's, you know, people need or should you know, have faith in something greater than self.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be like faith in a deity, but maybe faith in an idea.
Sure.
You know, faith in democracy.
Yeah.
Faith in humanity.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, faith in the goodness of this world and the faith that it can get better.
Mm.
Because without those kinds of faith, then there can be no hope.
Mm.
Without hope, we're just leading a hopeless existence, and we'll all become nihilists.
Well, what's your viewpoint on this planet? It's quite a big subject, but
religion generally, I tend to stay out of. I'm pretty neutral, so I don't really think I have the experience or knowledge to go in and say yes or no. But generally, you know, I stay out of it. I make some good points, and I think I share a lot of the same beliefs that you do have to have. Faith and belief, kind of, just in people.
Yeah.
Really, that's what I am.
Yeah.
That one day it'll get better. We'll stop fucking each other over. And like you're saying, there's a great belief among a lot of people that given enough time and resources, the human race can achieve anything. I do think that is possible because it's the theory of the infinite kind of.
No, I mean, if we
amount of monkeys and typewriters. Exactly. I mean, like,
if you set yourself a goal,
you're gonna type whatever you want.
I mean, if the human race set themselves a goal, like we need to create this spaceship that's going to take, you know, us into space, like thousands and thousands of people. We need to like get the fuck out of this planet. We need to evacuate Earth right now, and we need to stop fucking around, not concentrate about capitalism, not concentrate about money. You know, everybody gets the same cut. We need to do this shit right now. I believe that, you know, like if you said, jobs,
well,
money.
What about this? Yeah. What if humans just suddenly decided that it was our driving factor that humanity needed to be able to create something out of nothing?
Yeah. I'm sure we could do it. I mean, if, like, if you said, like...
something out of nothing?
I mean, like, well...
How would we go about that?
Well, you get nothing, and then you just, like, mix it with something, and you get something.
But then you make something.
Sorry?
You see what I'm saying?
All right, maybe it's impossible. Maybe it's, like, you can't create...
That's what I'm saying, is that there are simple things that are just impossible.
Sure, but, I mean, what would be the use of creating nothing out of something? You would have to start with something.
You could just make things cease to exist.
Yeah.
Something out of nothing, you could simply make them exist.
Right. But, like, if...
It's just not a... You know, given enough time and resources, we're never going to be able to do that.
No, but I mean...
Not that it really matters.
Well, that's
what I'm saying, is that this belief that we can do anything, it's got its flaws, you know? It's fallible.
Yeah, well...
Humans are fallible.
Yeah, I know. Too well. But the thing is, it's like, let's say your entire vision on life is turned upside down. You didn't have to go to work. You didn't have to. It's a bit like the Egyptian times, you know. Your whole kind of life is there to create this pyramid, and you are there to, you know, it's like you are there to create the pyramid, because if you do, you'll be, you know, rewarded eternally. You'll be alive, you know, you'll be like eternal. You see what I mean? Just because you're cutting this stone, and you wake up and you cut the stone, and you push this and you do that and you do everything, like that was like what I'm talking about. You have thousands and thousands of people looking at one goal instead of fighting for their own survival, basically.
Oh yeah, no, I completely realize that humans are capable of great things and tremendous things.
Yeah,
you know. But the idea that we can do anything is just, well, silly.
Yeah, I mean, we
almost
can't do anything.
Silly is the belief that there's a God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can't do, like, absolutely everything. Like, I don't know, let's say, well, tomorrow I decide that I can fly with no wings or anything or any kind of propulsion system. That's impossible.
No, you
see, now you're seeing what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But we do have this intrinsic belief that we could.
Yeah, I know, but that's...
Given enough time and resources.
Obviously, because...
It's just a fallacy.
Yeah, it's just it's like a fantasy, basically.
But that's a type of faith as well.
Sure.
Well, you also
and
have to bear in mind that the scientific knowledge of the human race today, compared to how it was 1,000 years ago, compared to how it was 10,000 years ago, is radically, radically different.
Sure.
There were things back then where we said, it can't be done, the Earth's flat. If you sail over there, you're going to fall off.
Exactly.
And that is a fact.
Well, that's
it
actually...
It can't be disputed.
I've done it before, but it's a fact.
But religion
now, if
also...
If we have a long enough timescale, 1,000 years from now, we'll be thinking in whole different ways.
Yeah.
10,000 years from now.
Yeah, but I have to say that religion...
I mean, if we're timescale, we'll be able to do anything.
Yeah.
I'm certain. Because our definition of nothing and our definition of something will have changed.
Yeah, but I think religion played a big part of our slow progress with science, because they held back a lot of information. They held back, you know, the whole thing about the Earth not being the center of the universe. Like, that's quite a big, big thing, you know. It kind of changes everything when you consider that. Back then, everybody thought that the world, you know, everything revolved around the world and all that kind of crap.
That's just like an egocentric, you know, view
also,
of the universe.
Also, they believed that the great floods wiped everything out. Nothing existed before the great flood. It was like zero day and shit like that. You know,
nothing
there was strong
like.
No, they, I mean, there was strong, there was strong evidence that, you know, the Egyptians fucking existed years ago, you know? Like, they just, like...
No. The whole flood thing was that... was that known civilization was destroyed.
No, I mean, they what they were trying to prove is that the flood wiped everything out, and that anybody that was on the Noah's Ark, whatever, survived, and, you know, they carried on, and no other civilization survived after the flood, which was completely falsified, because, you know, the Egyptians were there from, like, a long time ago, and they carried through the flood, and after, without any problems at all, and they weren't Christian, so how could this be happening? So,
it's because the people that wrote the story of the flood,
yeah,
were talking about their known world.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't have
but
any knowledge of the Egyptians.
But no,
however,
to them,
take,
that was the word of God.
If you take other cultures,
yeah,
that existed at the same time, for instance, the biblical flood story is retold in the tale of Gilgamesh,
yeah,
which is completely non-Judeo-Christian. However, they have the same story of the Ark and of the Covenant.
Mm.
The fact is that the flood did happen. You know, it happened in that area, and it did destroy their known world.
Yeah.
And that's where those stories come from. Now, sure. As far as, you know, religion taking that throughout the, you know, millennia.
Yeah.
And trying to make it absolute, well, I mean, yes, that's obviously fallible.
Yeah. No,
but, you know, there are all kinds of things about these civilizations that existed thousands of years BC that we can't wrap our brains around.
Yeah.
There are things that don't make sense.
Yeah,
for instance, Mayan temples in South America have hieroglyphs of a spider that only existed in Egypt.
Yeah.
Now, you see how far apart they are.
Hmm.
The likelihood of those two civilizations being able to share any kind of information are slim to none.
Hmm.
You know, and yet these things exist, and then you have the similarities between the Egyptian pyramids and the Aztec and Mayan pyramids.
I'm sure they had, like, TCP over smoke, you know?
Is the smoke one
so like,
gap?
I know. I will create this thing called a stack.
Yeah.
I will create it out of fire.
It was literally a stack of wood. And,
which is so fucking high that you can see it from Egypt.
Yeah.
And there's a dude up there who would light it and then put it out.
Yeah.
In a, like, minimal Morse code.
But it was all UDP, you know, so there was, like, loads of drop packets and stuff if it was a windy day.
I guess Shakespeare probably said it best when he said, "There's more on heaven and earth, Horatio, than there's dreamt of in your philosophies."
Yeah. Oh man. Anyway, before the whole episode turns into I can't even talk anymore.
Fine.
Aha! Yeah. Success. I win.
Yeah.
My God is best.
Oh. That's the whole thing, like, try and make Bilal not be able to talk anymore.
Cha-ching. Ionics 1, Bilal nothing. Weed.
Shall we move on to some of the news stories that I've dug up, and I don't know if you guys have anything.
I've got a few, but
yeah.
You go ahead.
Okay.
Rock and roll.
Let's see what we have as far as the government trying to work out what you're doing. E-tracking may change to the way you drive. It looks like they're trying to transform a good idea into frightening proposals to track Americans wherever they drive. The U.S. Department of Transport has been handling millions of dollars to state government for GPS tracking plots. Pilot projects designed to track vehicles wherever they go. So far, Washington State and have received a fat federal check to figure out how to levy these mileage-based road fees. Now, electronic tracking and taxing may become a DMV, I guess that's your transport or something, whatever, near you. The Office of Transport Policy Studies, part of the Federal Highway Administration, is about to announce another round of giant grants totaling $11 million. A spokeswoman on Friday said that the office is shooting for the end of the year for the announcement, and more money is expected for the GPS tracking efforts. In principle, the idea of what bureaucrats like to call value pricing of cars makes sound economic sense. Airlines and hotels have long charged fees for off-peak use. Toll roads would become more efficient, in particular less congested, if they could follow the same model and charge virtually nothing in the middle of the night but higher prices during rush hour. The price structure would encourage drivers to take public transport, use alternative routes, or leave earlier in the day. Problem, though, is that the road user fee system are being designed to and built in a way that strips drivers of their privacy and invites constant surveillance by the police, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security. Zero privacy protection. Details of the tracking systems vary, but general idea is that the small GPS device, which is known as a location receiver satellite signal, is placed inside the vehicle. Some GPS trackers constantly communicate their location back to the state DMV, while others record the location information for later retrieval. The problem, though, is that protection does not exist. No restrictions prevent police from actually monitoring you without a court order, the whereabouts of every vehicle on the road or not. The rule prohibits that the massive database of GPS trails from being subpoenaed by curious divorce attorneys or handed to insurance companies, basically sold on. No policy bans police from automatically sending speeding tickets based on what GPS data says. We all know that GPS data is actually not actually accurate. The Fourth Amendment provides no protection. The U.S. Supreme Court says two cases that U.S. versus Knotts and U.S. versus Caro, that Americans have no reasonable explanation. Expectation of privacy when they're driving on a public street. So basically what they're saying is you're on a public street. That means we own the street. That means we own whatever's on the street. So you can't be, you don't have no say. So even more shocking is that the initial idea that the bureaucrats are hitching a report prepared by the Transport Department funded program in Washington State that the GPS bugs must be made tamper proof and the vehicle should be disabled if the bugs are disconnected. This can be achieved by building in connections to the vehicle in ignition system so that failure to receive a monitoring a GPS signal after somebody's default period of vehicle operation indicates attempt to defeat the GPS antenna, reports say. So basically, let's say if you lose signal, your car stops working. It doesn't mention that worrisome scenario of somebody driving a vehicle with a broken GPS bug and an engine that suddenly quits halfway later, but it does outline a public relations strategy, blah, blah, blah. This thing is really fucked up. I think this is something that's going to be proposed in the UK as well. I strongly recommend that you would cease this project, and anyone that has any ideas on stopping this, let us know in a democratic, not really, but let's just say you have your voice and fucking shout about this.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, first off, I can see that there are a myriad of benefits of the system, as far as like tracking stolen cars, things along those lines. Although to make it mandatory, I think, isn't unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Just because you're on a public road, I mean, no, you have no expectation of privacy when you're in public.
Yeah.
That's quite common. That's why I can walk down the street with a video camera and film people and not get sued for filming them doing stupid things in public.
Yeah, like fighting the shit out of each other.
Yeah. But The thing that we run up against here is when you start making it mandatory, and you also make it so the vehicle is not going to work when that thing doesn't happen, then you're going to end up making it so, well, what if you don't want a GPS thing?
Yeah.
And what if you're only driving this vehicle on your land?
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to work.
Mm.
Secondly, about 3 years ago, I actually built a GPS jammer.
Right.
It was something that I was just trying to see if I could do. And yes, it's not terribly difficult, given, you know, small electronics knowledge.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I've got some plans for one. Now, what would stop me from standing on the side of a public highway with a omnidirectional GPS jammer and just turning it on and having every car that passes me shut off?
Not much.
Well, absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Holy crap. You know, this is a big problem. You know, there's absolutely no reason that this should exist. I mean, I was upset when I had reported that they were starting to track traffic due to traffic patterns and to be able to alert drivers to congestion and things. But, I mean, all right, in 1999, there was a federal mandate by Congress so that all cell phones that were sold within the United States after the 1999 date had to have been included a GPS chip, which can then broadcast via cellular frequency to be able to give the location of the phone. All major manufacturers, or all manufacturers that sell any cell phones in the United States, did comply with this. And so since 1999, it's been able to track cell phones via GPS down to about 6 meters of where they are, whether the phone's on or not. The only protection against it is taking the battery out. Now, first off, I mean, no, there are no constitutional protections against this. Then again, cell phones didn't exist.
Yeah, when the Constitution was written.
When the Constitution was written. Yeah. And the Constitution is a fluid document, as in it's supposed to adapt to the populace as we change.
Yeah.
Now, I see this as an affront. I don't think that the government has the right to know every movement of every citizen. Now, there are some that would disagree with me on the grounds of, well, you know,
terrorists.
What are you doing that you don't want the government to know about? Well, what I'm doing is I'm living my life, and I don't think it's honestly any of the government's business until I actually do something wrong to make it there.
I'm going to work. I'm getting something to eat. Why do they need to know that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Why do they need to know that? They don't need to know that, beyond which they shouldn't be able to track that. I mean, what's the point of that? Mm. And people would argue, sure, but I mean, it's not doing any harm if you're just going about your normal day-to-day things. Well, no, it's not doing any harm in particular, except for the fact that my every motion is being put into a database where then it can be tracked.
And so,
I mean, suppose on the off chance I should, you know, I get picked up for something. You know, something stupid, traffic violation, something along those lines.
Mm.
Under the Patriot Act, I mean, they don't need subpoenas to be able to then track every one of my motions for the past, like, however long they can.
Mm.
I mean, it's absolutely absurd. It goes beyond mandatory identification practices. This is everyone can be tracked anywhere. Although, there are ways around this. You can choose not to have a cell phone.
Yeah.
You can choose not to have a car. As far as a cell phone goes, I don't really think that that's all that difficult.
Hmm.
To choose not to have a cell phone, I don't have one. Well, I have several, but none of them have service, so that's kind of a moot point. I don't really think that's a big deal. Not having a car, well, that's going to directly influence,
everyone,
you know, your ability
America, really.
To provide for yourself in the United States.
Sure.
One of the things about it being so large and having such piss-poor public transportation is that you need a vehicle or need to live on a bus route to wherever you want to go, or in a major city with a good subway system to be able to even transport yourself from home to work. We're not living in a society anymore where you can live within walking distance of your work, in most cases. You know, yes, if you want to have a minimum wage job, I'm sure that there's a Burger King or McDonald's within walking distance that you could get to. It's not going to support you. You know, you could choose to try to move within a few blocks or whatever of your job, but that's going to be and to make the entire engine dependent upon a GPS
signal. I think
signal.
That's ridiculous.
What ends up happening if it's like a real bad thunderstorm and we're getting ionic disturbances from the sun?
What happens?
Or ionics disturbances from my goddamn GPS jammer?
What happens if your wife is pregnant and she has a breech birth and you need to get her to hospital like stat? And the only way is to break the speed limit, but this thing decides to cut your engine because you're going too fast. I think that another news story relates to something that's happening in, I think it's Germany or Holland, I'm not sure, where they're actually making a law that will prevent you from pressing the pedal down any further when it detects that you are breaking the speed limit because it has a GPS tracker. Now, what happens if you really need to go over the speed limit? It will not allow you with hydraulics to press the speed pedal down any further because you shouldn't be going that fast. Why are you going faster than the speed limit? You must be doing something illegal. How about I really need to get somewhere very, very speedy, you know, very quickly. I need to get from A to B and I don't want anything to stop me. I can face the consequences. I don't give a fuck. I need to get somewhere because I'm running away from something or trying to get to something. And the whole thing about tracking it with GPS, you could build in some sort of measurement of speed in the device. It doesn't have to be GPS. Why does it have to be GPS? Oh, so they can track you and find you when you do break the speed limit. And that's the only reason why. And it's the big movement for GPS tracking is really huge now. Something that was invented, something that was actually released in the news today was a cell phone for your pet canine. It's a dog phone. Basically, it has a built-in GPS, and it's also a cell phone, so you can call your pet dog if it may be lost. And it also tracks your dog if it happens to escape from a designated area. Fucking ridiculous, man. You know, this thing, I mean, it's a very expensive gimmick. It's about £400 or £300, $300 or something like that. I see this more of an attempt to persuade.
Wait till they make them for people.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to say, this is something for people, man. This isn't for dogs. Why the fuck would you have this on a dog unless it was like a pedigree or something like that? And then you shouldn't be fucking. You shouldn't have the responsibility of having a dog if you can't fucking look after this thing, you know? Wait for.
Well, I mean, you know, some dogs like to dig. They dig under fences. They get lost.
Yeah.
But I thought it was pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean,
and expensive, and I wouldn't be able to. I mean, I don't pay for my own cellular service. Why would I pay for cellular service for my dog?
Yeah, you know what I see? I see this dog actually, you know, chewing this fucking thing up. Dogs like to chew things.
I thought it was an interesting opportunity for some cool freaking.
Yeah.
Watch me freak your dog, bastard.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, what happens if you get their cell phone number and you can call the dog and go, you know, like, I don't know, run or something, give it commands. And also, can the dog actually hear GSM? I don't know, you know, can this dog actually properly hear the commands through the voice?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they can.
I don't know.
Whether they obey or not. The fun part would be finding out these numbers, being able to brute force the 4-digit code.
Yeah.
And then talking to the owners while the pet's, like, in the house.
Yeah.
Like, the dog's just sitting there on the couch, you're like, I'm gonna kill you in your sleep. What the fuck? Or like, fuck man, feed me some steak. What the hell is this dog food crap? You wouldn't eat this shit. Why are you feeding it to me? Excuse me?
Oh man, have you seen the new mobile phone targeted for 4-year-olds?
I almost vomited.
Have you seen that, Planet?
I saw the story on BBC News.
Yeah. Why the hell? I mean, if you're so incapable of managing a 4-year-old, and the only way you can track this fucking kid is with a cell phone, then you shouldn't be allowed to be a parent, you know? I mean, like, you should teach your child, if it gets lost in a supermarket or a mall, you know, go straight to security, say your name, say your mother's or your father's name, and, you know, that's the way to find you. Not carrying a fucking teddy bear phone around that's going to be radiating your child's brain because it hasn't even developed yet. The skull isn't thick enough to protect it against RFID. radiation, you know? It's, oh man, it just gets me right off my hook.
It's so fucked up. I mean, it's just a chavvy, pikey kind of culture, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Four-year-olds with phones.
Mm.
That's just wrong, mate, wrong. I mean, the only phone I had when I was 4 years old was a pretend one.
Yeah, exactly.
We had some great conversations on it. Didn't even plug into anything.
You were talking to yourself, man. That's the best.
Yeah, using my imagination. No radiation on that bastard.
No.
Also, what are you going to do? Call your kid up? This is a four-year-old. What do you think he's going to say to you?
It's like,
hello?
Where are you? I'm lost.
How may I direct your call?
Stop crying. You know, like, stop crying. And, well, I can't stop crying because I'm lost.
Four-year-old telecom.
Yeah.
To speak to a doo-doo poopy caca head, press one. To eat sand, press two. To search for candy, press 3. To throw a tantrum, press 4.
4!
To be connected to a live operator, plus 5. Hello? How may I direct your call? What? I want candy. I don't know where I am.
I don't know. What can you see?
I don't know. I'm lost.
Big.
I was in the backyard, and then I went to the front yard, and now I don't know where I am. I'm hungry.
It'd be like, you know, the conversation would be like, where are you, son? I don't know. What can you see around you? Cars and, like, buildings and stuff? Can you, like, stay where you are? But I don't know where I am. This thing is useless. I know. Why did you buy it? It's just frying my brain. I can't even fucking call from this thing. It's got 4 stupid buttons.
No, you can call from it.
Yeah.
But it's got, like, a few programmed
but
buttons.
But it's got built-in numbers, yeah. So, like, you know, the kid's going to be fucking pressing that 5,000 times a day.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was actually tempted to get one.
I mean, like, when you're 4 years old, I mean, what are you going to do to that thing? See if it'll break, if it falls from, like, a really big height, cover it in sand,
bury it,
bite it, chew it, feed it to your pet dog, I don't know.
See if it floats.
See if it floats, exactly, yeah. Man. Like, play
yeah, I saw an advertisement for one, and I was like, oh, that's it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah.
Everything has officially gone to hell.
Yeah.
We're now marketing cell phones to four-year-olds.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And, you know, oh, man. I saw an interview with the guy that was, like, marketing, well, that owned this company, and he was going, well, you know, it's illegal for us to market cell phones to children, but we're not marketing these things at children, we're marketing them at the parents, but for the children. And it's like, wait a second, so you're using that tiny little loophole in the law to, like, sell more extra phones? Yeah.
But why is it illegal to market cell phones to children?
I don't know, because, like, children, I mean, the whole kind of advertising
it's
system.
It's not like children have money.
You'd be
it's
surprised.
All going to come down to the parents anyway. They just make those laws so that kids don't throw tantrums when they don't get shit. I think it should be illegal to market toys to children.
Yeah.
Or cereals, for that matter.
I believe it should be illegal to market anything, full stop, to children. Why should children be exposed to these advertising? Well, you know, actually...
I think it should be illegal to advertise.
Yeah, full stop, man.
I'm tired of commercials.
Yeah, like, no more advertising ever again. You know, the decisions of marketing of what you buy should be made up to you, not because of a shiny product that's, you know, they spent millions of dollars designing this thing.
If you need something, you should be able to look up how to buy it.
Exactly.
And what you should buy.
Yeah.
I don't think that you should be bombarded by fucking commercials all the time. Everywhere you go,
it's
magazines, highway signs, fucking everything, man. I can't, like, walk 2 feet without freaking having been something advertised to me. And you know what? 3/4 of the time, it's not advertised at me at all, and I find it ridiculous. Like, honestly, why should I have to sit through a minute commercial about Depends undergarments?
Yeah.
I don't crap myself. I don't care.
Yeah. No,
like, for real.
I know exactly what you mean. I think this is a rant I did a few episodes back, you know. It's just ridiculous. I don't know if any one of you guys want to read the next story. or whichever story you like.
Okay, I got a cool one here.
Okay.
Virgin Atlantic right now, the airline, is offering flying club rewards for frequent flyer miles, so that if you accumulate enough frequent flyer miles, they will actually fly you 62 miles above the Earth into outer space, or inner space, really, by Virgin Galactic, wow, which is the first commercial space flight operator.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right. Frequent flyer miles making you astronaut. To this day, there have only been 44 astronauts on the entire planet. 44 people in the history of mankind that have orbited the Earth.
Yeah.
And for, let me just see, I think it's 2 million. Today. 2 million air miles. Right. That's how many frequent flyer miles you need. That's 570 flights between New York and London to be able to do this. But you too could be an astronaut.
Yeah, man, definitely. You know, it's all about going into space, man.
It's just damn cool.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome that they're offering those kind of frequent flyer miles, yeah, too. Also, if you don't have the frequent flyer miles, you can get into space. It's just the airline fare for one space flight is $200,000.
That's not too bad.
That's so
not
right,
awful.
Yeah.
Forget buying that house. Go ahead, go to space.
How many frequent flyer miles do you need? Like 10 billion or something?
2 million.
Whoa.
Wow.
So basically, it's just for Richard Branson.
Well, I think that if you, like, flew tri-weekly between, like, New York and London,
yeah,
you could get it done in a couple of years.
Hmm.
You'd also probably
do, you know, so I guess if you're already doing that anyway, that might be really neat.
Yeah.
But that's 570 flights.
It'd
probably be much cheaper just to pay the $200,000,
yeah, exactly,
than to try and rack up the frequent flyer miles. But if you're flying anyway, and you happen to, you know, have a couple million frequent flyer miles on your account, well, I say go for it.
So, any news from you, Planet?
There's a little thing on here. Which has brought my attention thanks to Google News,
yeah,
which is rather good, which is that in Belfast, Northern Ireland, initiatives are underway to create an open source centre of excellence across Ireland that will provide the expertise to examine and discuss the use and potential of open source going forward. Sounds pretty damn cool. What they're doing in Northern Ireland and also the Republic of Ireland is they've got 170 of their IT firms together who are all working as one to set up this open source kind of task force.
Wow. That's
pretty cool. Yeah. That's so it's not done yet. There's not really that much information on it, but there should be soon.
Is
it's a lot more open source knowledge in Ireland.
Is Microsoft trying to cock block it?
Not as far as I know. I'm certain that they are,
yeah,
in some shape, form, or fashion, because that's pretty much their goal.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say anything about it.
Cool.
It's just good that a lot of big firms are working together to discuss open source,
yeah,
as an alternative.
Yeah.
Really check it out, put some money into it. You know, it's got to be good for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see what else we have. Well, as you know, Kazaa's still going. But it looks like that Kazaa owners are accused of ignoring an order which was sent to them to stop all Australian users from using Kazaa. Australian record companies on Tuesday accused owners of popular Kazaa file sharing software to ignore a court or that they were recording ignoring court order to install filters aimed at curbing user privacy by Kazaa users. But Shaman Networks, the owners of Kazaa, said that they had complied with order by preventing people in Australia downloading the latest version of the popular software. We have basically followed through with the order, the Shaman spokesman said, and we have closed down access to getting the current version in Australia. What I'm going to see is like people actually Kazaring for the latest version and then downloading that through the old version of Kazaa. These moves were the latest in long-running legal battle by Australian record industry to shut down Kazaa, which is accused of music piracy on a massive scale. Industry lawyers claim Kazaa users downloaded up to 3 billion files each month, freely exchanging songs, music, and television programs without paying royalty fees or the copyright to owners. Federal court judge Mary Wilcox last week gave a Shaman until Tuesday to develop a new version of its own Kazaa Media desktop software with a filtering system built in, which was include 3,000 so-called keywords, most likely the popular names of record artists. Any searches containing those keywords will be blocked by the filter in a move aimed to stop Kazaa users from swapping their copyright material. Wilcox also told Shaman to use a dialog box to urge Kazaa users to download new software. Instead, when users logged onto Kazaa.com in sites in Australia, they were greeted by a page carrying a warning in red letters which says the download of Kazaa Media Desktop by users in Australia is not permitted. Australian users who try to download the software are prohibited to do so. In a statement, the chief executive of the ARIA, the Australian Record Industry Association, says it's a move. Sherman has thumbed its nose to the court. They were given a chance, but doing so right thing, they ruined it. Pete said that the statement they cannot be trusted or even take simpler steps towards complying with the court's order and giving have shown that they intend to do nothing about illegal activities occurring on a massive scale on their systems. Record company lawyers are also expected to return to court to claim that Shaman is breaching the order in on a demand action. The way I see it is, you know, like the statement here just says it quite right. You know, the Australian industry is trying to block basically all access to file sharing. Yeah, good luck with that one, man.
Well, yeah, they'll just use something else.
Yeah, I mean, they'll just, like, download the latest version through Kazaa. Somebody's going to serve it, and that's what people were doing before. Like, you know, Kazaa Lite? That's the version of Kazaa without any spyware and all that crap. How do you get it? You just download it. Simple as.
Well, again, you don't have to use Kazaa, do you? There's a lot of peer-to-peer network software out there.
Sure.
All they need is one that's not backed up by a company.
Yeah.
They just need one that's written by a guy and, hey, here's the source code, go do what the fuck you want, I'm washing my hands of the project. Take it, enjoy, share.
Exactly. Oh, man, you know, I just say let it go, man, just let it go. You know, let the people share. You know, I'm all for that kind of open fucking thing. There's no need for IP anymore, man. It's just like, you're going to open it to the people, you're going to have free media, you're going to have free TV, you're going to have everything, you know. How are the people going to get paid? Well, you know, fucking pay them as you usually do, because you have enough money to pay these people. You are now and making a big profit on over everyone.
Is this also an Australian thing we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, goddamn. Well, first off, the whole thing with the limiting search filters.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I can't search for Eminem. E M I N E M. How about M plus M?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Are we going to limit our searches so far that we can't search for anything?
That's... I don't know. Idiots, man.
Also, you see this in news groups a lot. They're starting to use kind of elite speak, or rather Leet's spelling to get around these things. So M&M, for example, would become 3-M-I-N-3-M.
Yeah.
Or 3-M-1, or however the hell you spell it. But, you know, the I's become 1s, the E's become 3s, and so on and so forth. And it looks bloody horrible, to be honest, this Leet speak, the Leet typing and all that crap. But that's another way around it, because then they're just going to have to add more and more and more and more to the search filter.
Yeah.
And eventually the search filter is going to become so fat that it's going to be a right pain in the arse. Mm. And like Ionic said, you won't be able to search for fuck all, and the entire thing will be useless.
Yeah.
You know, it's first off, it's stupid. Second off, it doesn't even matter. Because if you're using Kazaa to get stuff, well, you're lame.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't moved on.
I mean, that's the extent of it. You know, if you can't at least use, like, a Nutella client that doesn't have spyware embedded in it, well, then, I mean, you get what you get. You get what you deserve. If you're not going to be clever enough to, like, you know, borrow information properly, well, then fine. If this will actually stop you from downloading something, then you really shouldn't. You don't have the right to download it anyway.
You don't deserve it, yeah.
No, you don't. You don't. Mm. You know, I believe that nobody should ever have to pay for ones and zeros.
Yeah.
Which is digital anything.
Mm.
You know, precisely. I do believe that the people that develop good things should be compensated for what they develop.
Yeah.
But I don't think that necessarily involves large companies licensing their work and then raping the people that actually want to use it.
Precisely.
You know, the music industry, I've gone into that rant a whole ton. You know, the artist never sees the money that you pay for an album. They see, like, a fraction of it. A tiny little fraction of it. And, you know, the same thing exists everywhere. You know, you're a programmer for Microsoft. You create something wonderful. Well, guess what? You don't own your code. Microsoft owns your code. And then, you know, it's just insane. Yeah, they compensated for you, but, I just think that people should make what they deserve.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
and companies should either create something as a corporate entity or not. And companies should be paid what they deserve.
Mm. I mean, really, the whole kind of, the whole forefront of free media is really taking off now. You know, you check out videos.google.com, also many other kind of free media sources like hackermedia.org, us, as an example, like we're bringing you a, you know, live radio show every day, giving you the voice to speak and all this kind of stuff. And do you see that as a commercial business where you know, we're getting money from a company because we're advertising through us and stuff? I don't see that happening at all.
Well, except for me.
Yeah, except for you. And we don't
Pepsi.
We don't charge you for listening to us. You know, by Nike. You know, we don't do that. Oh man, I just saw a really old printout of one of my websites that I made, like, when was this? Oh, 98th of the 6th, 00. Wow. That's old. It's like 5 years ago, this website.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
You still had two characters for the year. That's millennium bugged, man.
Yeah.
That could be 1900, 1800, I don't know. Update your shit. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one for you guys. It's a group called the Builders Association. They're a multimedia performance art group who is doing a show, basically, called Supervision.
Yeah.
Which is a multimedia piece about the way that data surveillance is infiltrating our daily routine. A show on the collaborated with the design firm D-Box premieres October 13th at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, It blends actors with several technologies, motion capture, panoramic video projection, and custom-made biometric applications, and multiple rendering systems that let the video director synthesize pre-recorded and real-time elements. So basically, it's like a multimedia extravaganza where they show the tracking of people's data through public and private infrastructure live. One of the things that they do is, in a series of vignettes, they introduce the audience to several people struggling with identity loss, and then ticket holders to the show's own data, assembled from box office receipts and public information, is integrated into the production. Like, you'll go to watch this show, and at some point they'll pull up your picture and all the information that they can publicly come up with on you on the screen, and show how your data goes through so many servers per second. It's actually a really cool project. They call it art, but I call it scary.
That sounds incredible. You got a link for that?
Ooh, a link. I think that you should probably Google Builders Association with Supervision. Because the article that I have doesn't have a link. But this is real-time freaking performance art. Good shit. And the fact that they actually developed their own biometric application for the show is
awesome.
Freaking brilliant. These are, like, very, very intelligent, savvy artists.
Gonna have to check some of that out, man.
Yeah. Indubitably. Let's see. I had one more bit of news.
Okay.
And this is on our everybody's favorite company, Google.
Woot.
I actually wanted to, before I got into the article, like, just talk briefly. I've seen a lot of people on, like, both sides of the aisle about Google. Me, for one, I'm for it. I haven't seen in their corporate policies or in what they're doing. I mean, they do have the ability to severely infringe on a person's privacy, simply given the wide range of applications and services that they offer. And the fact that, you know they track who searches for what and what people are doing on Google. I mean, they do it for their advertisers, you know. I've never actually even noticed one of their advertising banners. I'm, like, pre-programmed to ignore them.
Yeah.
But they get a lot of money for them, so I'm sure that they do work. And then on the other side of the aisle, you have people like StankDog. God bless him. But he's completely against it, specifically because they do have such power in being able to track their users and manipulate user information. I wanted to open up a brief conversation about Google good, Google bad.
Okay.
You know, and then I've got some news with a few different competing companies and what's going on right now with Google and AOL and Microsoft and Yahoo.
Okay.
But let's start with the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, I mean, okay, the way I see it, Google is becoming massive. They always have been very big, but the services that they're providing now, i.e. Google Maps, I think it's fantastic. You know, you're able to map virtually anything to anywhere. You're able to bring whole communities together, and you have select privacy options, how much you want to be you know, open to this. Google Earth and all those kind of other projects that they've come up with, fantastic. You know, they're giving you, they're not forcing you, like, you know, you have to have Google Desktop to be able to view Google Maps, you have to have this search bar and all this crap. I mean, look at like videos.google.com. you know, you're able to upload your own video up there so that everybody can see, and they have a built-in player into the website for you to be able to stream the video straight to your, you know, your consumer market, if should I say. This is something that we might even look into when we start releasing a video version of Hacker Voice. You know, it's from that point of thing, I think they're good, but yes, they have the potential to be very evil, but I don't think this is something, I don't think this company is interested in that, because they have a very set their rule set is set in stone, basically.
The thing that really, Planet, did you have anything you wanted to say before I'm sorry?
It's just pretty much the same things, really. They do a lot of great products, so I obviously am very for them and for the things that they've given us. There is the potential, and potential is the word. Maybe all this could possibly be used for bad, but there's no evidence of that, so I can't judge them on anything that they've not done. One of the things, Stank was pretty much saying the same things in all the episodes that I ever read, and his 2600 articles as well. Basically just use common sense, keep your eyes open, don't trust blindly, but there's a lot of cool stuff out there, and just think how it may be used one day if it was made by bad people, you know. So that's about it. Pretty much the same thing that's been said over and over again.
Yeah.
I think the thing that really did it for me was that story that I reported upon. Jeez, it was this summer. No, it was early September. About Yahoo aiding the Chinese government to imprison a journalist.
Yeah.
Because of what he had posted. And then a subsequent thing that I had said about Google using their cache and the way that they use their cache system, more of how they link it, to circumvent the Great Firewall of China.
Yeah.
That just, like, to me, says it all. You know, you've got one company here who is perfectly, you know, Yahoo is so interested in having a Chinese market share that they're willing to, like, basically sell out people to the Chinese government, where Google realizes that they're gonna have a Chinese market share, especially if they don't pander to the Chinese government, and realizes that they don't have to pander to the Chinese government. I mean, that was kind of like almost a hacker mentality type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, okay, China's going to throw up a firewall that's going to block one of our services. Well, we're going to figure out a way to hack their firewall so that we can get around that. And Google gained a tremendous amount of respect in my mind, you know, just for that. Because, I mean, I'm sure it was still profit-motivated, because the more people that can use Google, period, the more people that see their advertisements, the more money that they get. But it was done in the complete opposite way that Yahoo was doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that that was not only more effective, but I gained a tremendous amount of respect and for Google, and lost a tremendous amount of respect from Yahoo.
Mm.
Because, you know, information has to be free. Maybe not free as in you don't, you know, always have to pay nothing for it, but free as in anybody should be able to access it.
Yeah.
Which brings me on to the actual news story. It appears that Time Warner Group, which owns America Online, is going to be switching its search engine from Google to Microsoft's search engine. Yes, Google is none too happy about this, but is unwilling to comment about the switch, simply saying that it is looking forward to continuing its partnership with AOL. And on the other side of things, it's saying that the, quote, suddenly the competitive landscape looks a lot less favorable to Google for the next year at this time compared to last year at this time. It would be a mounting threat to Yahoo research as well. So basically, we're looking at Microsoft trying to take out Google and trying to take out Yahoo.
Mm.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, Yahoo does offer some good services and things like that, but their search engine is just subpar.
Yeah.
And the rest of it, you know, can be easily duplicated. I don't see Yahoo as a major player. I think it's down to, we finally, you know, after decades and decades of creation and competition and companies butting heads, we're coming down to the final showdown. It's going to be Microsoft and Google. And they both seem to know it. Like, the people at Microsoft, from what the things that they've released, have certainly suggested that they know that Google is going to be their primary competitor. Which I find funny, because Google doesn't sell operating systems, doesn't sell software. Hell, the only thing they sell is advertising space.
Yeah, that's precisely their business model. They sell absolutely nothing to the end consumer.
But nothing.
Nothing at all. Do I have to pay for Google Maps? Let me think about this. No.
You don't have to pay for Google anything.
Websites like Frapper are able to use the Google Maps engine to create beautiful and fantastic communities. No.
Yeah.
Is Microsoft an evil satanic company? Yes.
Well, let me see. Do we have to pay for Microsoft applications and operating systems?
Yes.
Yeah, what's the going price for XP Professional right now? Isn't it
about
like 400 and something dollars?
It's about £180 here in the UK, which is about
okay, so
230.
Like, yeah, 230, 300,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
I can tell you this, I got an upgrade copy of XP Pro off the shelf yesterday.
Does that include the service pack update?
That
includes the SP2.
Oh, right, so it does SP2.
That one.
Okay.
Wow. And then you got to patch it.
Yeah.
Of course, of course. And let's not even talk about some of their corporate software.
You're looking at... Oh, man, it's like per seat, per server. They've got all these weird licensing things. They've got, like, open licensing. They've got OEM licensing. They've got, you know, oh, man, like, let's say you buy the package and then you have to license just, like, terminal services. You have to license concurrent connections. You have to license...
No, you got
to
license every
man.
Little fucking thing
yeah.
you want to do on that
But
thing.
Then again, I could just, like, buy or get my friend to make me a boot copy of Debian, stick the floppy disk inside a machine, and download the entire operating system via apt-get through the internet. And it basically patches, installs, and configures itself in one go. It doesn't even reboot, and away you go. You're there with a login screen.
Although, in a corporate environment, you would run into licensing fees.
For Debian?
Yes.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
No, you definitely would. As soon as you bring it into a corporate or money-making environment,
right.
there are licensing fees.
Right, okay. But they're far
They are, on average, between... 3-7% of what you'd be paying for
yeah.
a Microsoft product.
Sure.
And it depends. There's a lot of things that you can use that you don't have to worry about licensing, but
yeah.
there are licensing fees involved in using Linux in a corporate environment.
Yeah, definitely. Like any.
That's
sort of
one of the ways that the open source, you know, community actually stays alive.
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree with that. You know. In a corporate sense, of course, there should be licensing for that kind of stuff because you're making money off the software. But then that excludes all charitable organizations and educational organizations where the software is free to demo because you're not a for-profit organization, which benefits any charitable organization. I'll tell you this because I know there are some charitable organizations that roll over a lot, like a million a year sort of thing, so they can benefit directly from the software.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, schools. I mean, come on, man. Like, why not just stick Ubuntu on every single machine? You know, it doesn't have to be Ubuntu, but I guess that's the simplest one to use.
Well, you owe me 25.
I think that actually,
right. Yeah.
That raises a good point.
Actually, we'll call it even with Chinese.
What's that?
sorry, I thought I was talking all over Alex.
No, he's talking to someone else. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The current school system in the UK, obviously has changed quite a bit since I was a wee lad and I went through it. Obviously, when I went through it, they were teaching us Windows 3.1 and 3.11.
That's right.
And that was it.
Yeah.
With the current world, does anyone know if kids doing IT GCSE and ITA levels, if they're teaching them kind of both sides of the fence? Here's the Microsoft angle, here's the Linux.
I can tell you right away that through my education, and also because I used to teach IT in a school, no, it's all Windows. My last
You college, have to take... You have to take a really specialized course.
Yeah, it's really
to be able to learn anything.
My college that I left were bringing in Microsoft certifications into the college, where all you're learning is the Microsoft software. Mm. You know, there was no open source. It wasn't even talked about. The IT manager didn't even know about it. The guy, the technician, knew a lot about it. He ran it. You know, we. When I was teaching the stuff, it was primarily Windows stuff. It was primarily Windows networking. I threw in a lot of other stuff as well, you know, because I am a hacker, and you can't just say, well, this is the TCP/IP stack, and that's it, and just say that and end it. No, you talk about the vulnerabilities, the exploitations, the way to secure it, and all that kind of jazz, which made the lessons go on even longer, so, you know.
I think because it's very, very bad if they're just teaching kids at this basic level of computing, which your first level is your GCSEs, your second level is your A-levels. If at those basic levels they're only teaching them one option, that's got to be very wrong, surely.
That's it, because, they assume that you're going to come straight out of education and you're going to go into the corporate environment, and what are you going to use in the corporate environment? Windows. You know, it's like the only Windows. That's the only operating system ever.
That's no longer a safe assumption, though, is it? It was when I was.
Fair enough.
School,
you wouldn't.
But not now.
Yeah, you wouldn't see that. You might see NetWare or something like that running on your server end. But
yeah,
back in them days, computers weren't even networked. You know, only like a few more years in where school was able to afford like standard BNC connectors through fucking coaxial, but you saw, you know, stuff being networked, and then you were using Windows for work groups and stuff like that, and that was fundamentally
That's entirely true, though, because if you were to look at a terminal as a computer, I mean, it obviously wasn't, because it's simply connected to a mainframe. However, the computer lab, as it were, at least in educational, you know, places, and also in business environments, was set up in the same way. It was just that the terminal only had enough processing power to physically connect itself to the mainframe to log into its user account.
Yeah, basically.
Whereas now we're running more of a distributed computing environment, we're still having massive servers. So, in a way, every terminal was networked to every other terminal.
Yeah.
As in, if you wanted to send an email to them, you could. Like, I remember in 89, email was the thing where you would actually write an email to a person that was using the same mainframe.
Yeah.
And when they logged into their account, they would be able to check their email and see who of the users of the mainframe had sent them a message. Mm. They were also linked together rudimentary through telephone lines, through a thing called outdials, and I'm so sad that these died, because there used to be ways to dial into a terminal, be able to access a certain program, and get a dial tone, where you'd be able to dial out of that mainframe to, assuming another mainframe, but you could also do it to other telephones. And that just simply doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
If it does, it's because of a computer or a mainframe that hasn't been updated its software in like 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I remember those days, but honestly, in an education kind of sense, networking was simply to connect network peripherals such as printers and all that kind of stuff, remote file storage, and then you had the advent of intranets in, you know, school web stuff, and it was all primarily Windows. Everything was running Windows Internet Explorer, and it was so...
I don't know what kind of... The college mainframe was running Windows?
Yeah. It was, I mean, no, it wasn't a mainframe. It was a server.
Oh.
No, it wasn't a mainframe. No.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
All we ever had was a bunch of Windows 3.11 client machines that we used to work on. A couple of Novell servers that we'd log into for privileges and shared resources and email and stuff like that. And like you say, shared printers and all that jazz. Very, very basic.
Yeah, pretty much.
But there was no real kind of thin terminal business going on.
No, no.
So we had quite basic.
Yeah, stuff. no thin clients. It was just like RM machines, and they're all wired up through BNC connectors, and that was it. And, you know, it was all like a, it was a token ring.
Token ring.
Yeah.
Token ring,
yeah. But... I mean, when it was all about money, because they didn't have a fuckload of money, but they wanted to bring these things into school, and you know, Microsoft were offering a good deal. They were offering, you know, primarily free software to educational institutions, RM machines, you know, sold bunk loads of this stuff, very cheap. You know, stuff like this was very expensive that day. You know, you were looking at a lot, you know, compared to what kind of stuff you can get now. You know, thinking about the kind of the processing power of a school network now is like, if you did a distributed kind of cluster for a school, you could crack some, you know, serious code through it.
Actually, Mitnick did that
with
the San Francisco University.
Yeah.
Supercomputers that they had there. I don't know. I think that I was pretty fortunate that my mother went to college as late in my life as she did.
Yeah.
Because the first computers that I really played with, I mean, the very first ones were old Tandys when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
But when I was 9, I actually got to play, you know, on a Unix mainframe.
Yeah. Wow, nice.
That was my introduction to, like, networking and, like, you know, really computing, because the other things that I was doing were silly math games where I didn't know how to run them. They just ran for me because that was what the school wanted them to. But, you know, being able to jump on a Unix mainframe and just, you know, fuck around was amazing to me at the time. I remember this old school Star Trek game.
Yeah.
I mean, like, crazy.
Do you remember Logo?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, my earliest experiences with Unix mainframes was in primary school when I was very young. And they had like a server room, well, like a kind of server classroom, full out with client machines. They were thin clients that ran off a Unix mainframe that was situated. It was like a box about the size of, I don't know, a subwoofer or something like that. And it was all serving, though, it was like proprietary software, you know, designed for certain applications, like, I don't know, basic kind of ASCII paint and a Logo, and that, you know, all those applications would run off it. You didn't have much in the way to play with. Then again, maybe there was, and I just wasn't aware, you know, because I didn't really know much about computers, and then they, so...
I was pretty much put... like in the Garden of Eden as far as computing of the time went.
Yeah.
This was 1989. And the mainframe that I was working on at the time was the second largest in the world.
Nice.
It was at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. It was an amazing machine. And I don't know, I just, something about it really got me, and I started playing around with it. I remember the first time that I realized it had an email system on it, and I mean, this is before, you know, email.
Yeah.
You know, users on the same mainframe sending messages to each other, and since I had access to my mother's account, I used to, like, write emails to people she knew, pretending to be her, just, like, thinking I was fucking clever.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 9 at the time. I got a huge kick out of that.
Yeah.
Especially when they replied, and my mom's like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Also, what was I going to say? Yeah, that mainframe you were using probably has enough processing power as my mobile phone now.
Actually, that mainframe that I was using still has more processing and RAM than my desktop has.
Really? What was the spec of that? Do you remember?
Hmm?
Do you remember the spec of that?
I don't remember precisely. I think it had 730-something megs of RAM.
Right.
And the processor...
1989.
Actually, the processor was definitely slower than my current desktop processor. But, it could handle a distributed load a lot better than my desktop machine would be able to.
Yeah. Well, it was...
It also took up about 1,200 square feet of a basement.
Ouch.
And before I ever, you know, used the system or logged on to it, one of the computer science professors that my mom was taking a course from actually, like, walked me through the whole thing.
Wow.
Through the whole complex. And, oh, I can't tell you. I wish I had a videotape of it. Yeah. It was beautiful. It was just, you know, you see those pictures of old mainframes.
Yeah.
Well, this, I was walking through them. I mean, stacks and stacks of these, like, seven... tall, huge boxes, rectangular, just like lights blinking, and like we walked past a huge tape drive. I was like, a tape drive? Whoa! My mom's like, that's kind of like an audio cassette, except much bigger, much more information, and they were using like a tape backup. They had other hard drives, but oh, the whole thing was just so damn cool. I don't know, my mom's all to blame.
Yeah,
she made me the hacker I am.
Yeah. No, it's very
true.
It like early experiences with those kind of things set your future. And I mean, I remember, I think I've talked about this before, like the first time I ever saw something like that was when my dad walked me through a power plant, and they had their server room, which took up most of, I don't know, like let's say a gym hall in a school. And it was just full of these tape drives and the processing, and it was just like a processor would literally be three kind of cupboards, you know. It was like mad, like the hard disk would be a separate room and the RAM would be in a separate building sort of thing, and this whole thing was wired up together to a really small terminal, which kind of, you know, it really loses the whole point when actually you're accessing through it through like a thing that's the size of a calculator with like a ream of paper printing out all the data. That was my first kind of experience with these machines. I never got to play around with it, but you know, that was enough to set me off, and you know, that was enough to install the virus in my brain. Hello.
Oh.
I don't know what happened there.
Sorry, man. I just think I crept out on this end. It's a little G-talk thing going on.
Okay. I don't know if... Ionix is still there.
Of course I am.
Yeah. Let's kind of... I don't know. Shall we close things off? Or we're going over like 32 minutes over the show, so...
Hey, it's up to you, man.
Yeah. I don't know.
Whatever you want to do.
Shall we talk more about computers?
I think we may.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's up to you. I could do either.
I don't mind, man. Let's carry on for a little bit. You know, I don't know. What do you think, Planet?
I think close it off.
Yeah.
Carry it on another night.
Okay.
Like tomorrow night.
Yeah. All right.
There's plenty more trips down memory lane coming your way, listeners.
Yeah. All right. Cool stuff. Excellent. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Something Radio.
What the hell is this shit?
Yeah, what the fuck radio?
Oh, wait, I'm not on VinRef? Damn it.
They tricked me.
This is like the ghetto VinRef. Yeah.
You're listening to Binary Revolution Radio. This is Stank Dog, and catch you same time, same channel. Same hack time, same hack channel.
There you go. Funny, I was on BinRev last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had the author of Phishing revealed.
Yeah, yeah,
a
I
new
saw
book
that. Yeah.
On there. And, you know, I threw him a bunch of, you know, sort of softball questions.
Yeah.
Like, how lucrative is it? Where are the countries that this is from?
Yeah.
You know, who falls for these scams?
Hmm.
I don't know. I was the only caller, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you spam them again?
No,
oh,
I didn't.
Damn.
I didn't even actually get an opportunity to, like, plug HBR.
Oh, damn.
Well, that's all right.
You can plug it all you want now.
There's always next week.
Yeah. There's nobody listening to us now.
Well, so long as they... There's nobody listening?
No, I'm joking. There is. Actually, yeah, there is.
Okay.
But yeah, guys, you should really check this website out. I think it's called hackervoice.co.uk. Yeah, fantastic.
Really apparently cool. Really great.
Yeah.
Really great.
From what I've heard, I don't know.
Oh.
Okay.
All right, well,
cool.
This is a good night from Ionic.
Yeah.
To all of y'all. Belial, I'd like to talk to you a bit after the show.
Yeah, why not?
No, mostly about shoutcasts and such, but I'm going to have to take a brief recess.
Okay. All right, well, thank you for listening to another show of Hacker Voice Radio. I hope you found it entertaining and a trip down memory lane, unless you're 6 years old, where you've missed out on quite a lot of history.
And you're too busy with your new mobile phone anyway.
Yeah.
You fuckers. Go fucking call your mom. It's the big button with a house on it, bitches. You better do it now, otherwise you're gonna have to call the one with the policeman, because I'm gonna whoop your ass. Oh, you think I'm kidding? I'm hunting all you little bastards now.
And
yeah, you laugh now. You're not gonna be laughing when you're eating your own foot.
I want my mommy.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah, I want your mama too. It don't make no difference. Well, this has been Ionic, obviously the American.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm gonna enjoy the ones where we're all together in one room.
You're gonna hear things like, ow!
Stop poking me! I told you
and,
not to touch me there.
Oh, I thought that was my leg.
Sorry, I thought that was my penis as well.
Sorry about that. Simple misunderstanding. Here, here.
What, what? Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That was...
I don't think God will have any power.
I don't think he cares.
I don't know.
Philosophical.
He reigns supreme here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Maybe in that godless UK country you guys come from. But come on over here. That means lightning bolts be flying.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to enjoy defacing some Jesus Loves You billboards.
I actually haven't seen any of those.
No?
Bumper stickers.
Yeah.
But no billboards.
Yeah.
I think we should go out
Jesus.
To the state capitol with some giant signs.
Yeah.
And be like, you're watching me, I'm watching you.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I'm about to take a piss.
Yeah.
And have you seen my dog?
Yeah. Free porn.
Free porn. And then a website address.
Yeah.
www.amateurcurves.com.
Just like spam surveillance cameras with like websites and stuff and go for more information.
I just want a giant sign that says, what the fuck are you looking at?
Yes, yes, definitely. And I think we should film it all.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Especially the part where I get beaten by the police.
Yeah. And the part
I need
where,
a good lawsuit.
And the part where Planet Lave runs.
You'll just see the camera bobbing down the road shakily. I'm out of there. I'm not going to fuck around with the SWAT guys, no way.
the thing you want to do is, like, put the camera in the bag, turn it off, and, like, pretend like you're eating your lunch. Because running away from the state capital, that's going to put you in a rather nasty part of town.
Yeah, they're going to think you're a terrorist.
No, you're going to end up in, like, crack capital of upstate New York.
Running with a camera.
Right, yeah.
I'll just say
put the camera away and ignore us completely.
Yeah.
If somebody asks you, you just were looking for a place to eat your lunch, and you'll kindly be on your way if you could direct me to the nearest bus stop. Do not go running off into inner city Albany. For the love of God, we'll never see you again.
This trip just sounds better and better all the time.
Yeah.
Well, just don't deviate from my flight path.
Don't deviate from the thin yellow line on the ground.
And we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll bring one of those little kids' mobile phones so if you're lost, you can call me up.
Yeah, we can call you on Teddy phone.
Where are you?
Fine. Do I need to buy a bunch of pistols so as soon as you guys get here, you can just shoot people who try and rob you?
Yes. Can I have a shotgun, please?
Oh, yeah, those are easy to come by.
Cool.
It is still like the Old West, isn't
it? On Monday, I get to fill out the forms for the ATF on my new rifle. That's going to be some fun.
Yeah.
Nothing like registering a new rifle with the United States government. It's a beautiful thing.
Okay.
Where were we? Finishing the show?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, yeah, I thought
20 minutes ago?
I forgot about that
Are we still recording this?
Yeah, we're still recording, yeah.
Oh, guns are bad.
Okay, cool. Let's round things up in a fashion.
Throw some fucking music on here, man.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's get done with this.
Good night.
Ta-ta.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Good night.
Bukake.
I like bukake. You like
bukake. These are not the droids you're looking for.
We like bukake.
He likes bukake. Bukkake by elephant. Donkey Bukkake. Haruka Butai, Dasine, Kai, Utai, Yum, Bukkake.
Sandorasanone, Bukkake.
Sus madre chupes los huevos de mono y Bukkake.
¿Por qué a Bukkake?
Cac.
Me mucho grande, Bukkake.
Bukkake.
Muchos amor, Bukkake.
My precious.